Hey everyone, Brittany Mangelson here, and I am really excited about today's episode because we are bringing you a brand new series. Keeping up with our caffeinated theme, it is called Chai Can't Even, and we are going to be interviewing millennials in Community of Christ and just finding out their faith story and their faith convictions and why they stay engaged in religion, when so many people in our generation are walking away from religion. And I'm really, really excited, and we have some great interviews lined up. And so welcome to Chai Can't Even.
Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
So today we have on Sean Langdon, who serves the church as a 70 in the greater Pacific Northwest area. And I have to say that I have known Sean for a couple years, mostly on the internet. We have met a couple times in person. But one thing that really struck me when I first encountered Sean on the internet was that his little tagline on like Facebook and maybe Twitter and Instagram says, "Not your grandpa's kind of preacher." And I thought, you know, I think this is a guy that I am going to like. So, and I hear, Sean, that you have a story that goes behind that. And also, I'm just curious, if people that might not know you or haven't seen you before, haven't heard you preach, what makes it so you're not your grandpa's kind of preacher?
Well, hello. When I was doing homeless ministry in Washington, some guests that came to our shelter that I got to know, and they always, first of all, Community of Christ was always known as a loving, welcoming, accepting place for them. And we were the Monday night hosting church for our shelter ministry there. But throughout my experience there, throughout the time, they came to know me as somebody who wasn't afraid to dye my hair, and that, so I had bright blue colored for a long time and other funky colors along the way. And they knew that I was somebody that they could talk to about a variety of different things that you probably would not hear talked a lot about in churches. And there was one of the ladies within that group that I got to know quite well and even stayed in contact with after I moved from the area for a while, just started to tell me, you know, you're not my grandpa's kind of preacher. and that just kind of stuck. And so I used that as kind of a tagline, yeah, on different social media sites and whatnot, because I absolutely loved that. That I was seen as somebody who wasn't maybe the traditional form of what they would think of as a preacher, because for me that was important. So, you know, having colored hair or not being afraid to speak out on some issues that maybe they wouldn't have heard spoken out about from the pulpit, and having tattoos and piercings and just all of that. And so that's where that came from.
I absolutely love it. Thank you so much for sharing. So like I said, this new series, we're just going to be talking to millennials in the church and talk about our experiences growing up and currently in the church and what gives us hope for the future. So Sean, we are just going to start at the beginning, I guess. And I'm just curious about your background in the church. Did you grow up Community of Christ? Did you attend the camps? What's your background with Community of Christ?
So I was born into the church, fourth generation a church member, starting back to my great grandmother, I guess. I was a part of a congregation in Bothell, Washington when I was born for a very short period of time, but that, we then, moved to the Everett congregation, and we had, at the time an, RLDS congregation in Everett, Washington that, I was raised in and had, I was baptized in that congregation and confirmed at the age of 8 with another friend who was the same age as me, also named Sean. So we had our that experience together, which was cool, and I still have some pictures from that time. that I reflect on every once in a while. I was raised by a single mother. Dad was in the picture, but not in the church. She was the one that was the church connection, and two brothers. And we grew up going to that congregation, which then eventually moved to a different area and got a new name for the congregation. And it was just a great, for me, in the life of the church, it was I really learned a lot about what it means to be a part of the community through that, and to be taken in to the, by the community and nurtured as I grew. And so with that, there was also camps were a huge part of our life, as they are with many families and community of Christ. Youth camps in the summertime and retreats throughout the year, as well as what we call family reunions, our week-long camps that focus on worship and relationships and learning opportunities with one another. And my home campground, we have many, but the one that I would go to was called Samish Island, and it was in northwest Washington, not far from the Canadian border. And every summer, you would look forward to summertime, because it meant that you got to go to Samish Island and go to camp starting at 8 years of age up through the time that you graduated, and then as well as those family camp reunion experiences as well. They were always knew that you could get 2 weeks out of your summer there, and you lived for that all year long.
When you were growing up in the church and going to camps and everything, what was your interaction, I guess, with the world around you? Like, what did your church experience, how did your church experience inform how you treated those who maybe weren't members, or, you know, whether they were friends or strangers? How did it impact how you interacted with the world?
So I can't, you know, think about that. It's hard to define that in a way, because I didn't see any impact in terms of how I viewed other people, in terms of the difference between being a member in the church and not being a part of the church. I didn't see a lot of difference between church friends and school friends and friends from other aspects of life. Never really felt any pressure to try to get them to come and make them members. That just wasn't there. What was there was opportunities that we had to invite kids to come to, or, you know, friends to come to various ministry events. We had this event at the congregation that I was raised in called Mid-Month. And it was the third Wednesday of every month, or second, I can't remember for sure. We had a potluck and then just some kind of activity. And that was the perfect opportunity, the perfect kind of situation to invite a friend to come to the church. And there was we were encouraged, I remember, to invite to those events. Also, youth camps were huge to invite from. When I was growing up, they had an opportunity where if you invited a friend who had never been to a camp before, you both got to come for half price. So there was that desire to try and reach out and invite in that way, and opportunities for that. And we still do that today. That practice is still in place in my area. But there wasn't, otherwise there really wasn't any pressure to try and convert people. There wasn't pressure to bring them in. There wasn't pressure to view them as different than who we were. If anything, I think that there was the invitation and the encouragement to see them as a part of the greater picture of who we were, not necessarily the community of Christ, but just our understanding about community in general and what that means and how they fit into the picture of community. So an example of that I remember vividly from when I was growing up, specifically in my teenage years, is that we had, 9/11 was a huge part of my growing up. I was in high school, and a sophomore in high school when that happened. And so at our congregation, we had arranged a special, me and another person had planned a special kind of like vigil opportunity. And then afterwards, we were going to sign some cards to mail. And we were going to assign cards to mail to expressions of Community of Christ ministry in both Washington, D.C. and New York City. And just letting them know that our, you know, that our thoughts and prayers were with them. But also, then the third card that we signed was for a local mosque in the area that had been vandalized right after 9/11 happened. And from the background that I have within Community of Christ, as soon as I heard about that on the news, it was apparent to me as a, you know, 14, 15-year-old that that just was not right. And that that wasn't what God wanted for the world. And that wasn't following the Christian way, even though it was done in the name of Christianity, unfortunately. And so we sent a card to that mosque as well, and included them into in our thoughts and our prayers and our support. And so that was, you know, that for me, that was very much part of all my growing up, is understanding that there was really no, there was no in or out. It was us. It was all of us as a part of community. And we just had our role within the greater sense of community.
I find a lot of meaning in that, that you were able, as a youth, as a sophomore in high school, to be able to plan and be such an integral part of that. Which brings me to a question. I'm curious about how you were treated as a youth. What leadership opportunities were you given? How were you mentored into, you know, what would be your current role today? But which we'll get to that in a little bit, but
yeah. So there's a few things that, that I can think of when we talk about that. One is I always thought found church is a very welcoming place. I never felt on the outside when I was with my church community. I remember, so we have, what we call temple school classes in Community of Christ, which are, learning opportunities that are usually at least about 10 hours long that you go through over a period of time with an instructor. And this particular temple school class that was being offered in my congregation, I was probably about 7 or 8, I want to say. And I have this vivid memory of being, in the classroom at the Everett congregation at the time, it's since closed, but being in that congregation and in the classroom surrounded by a bunch of adults, and my brothers may have been there with us, I don't know. I always had a sense, ever since I was young, really young, I always wanted to be in the group. So I was always one of those kids that was always around adults growing up, which seems very different than how I live my life now, but as a youth minister. But growing up, I always wanted to be with the older crowd as a sense of belonging. And so I remember being in that temple school class. And of course, you know, we were me and my brothers, there's three of us, and we weren't always known as the quiet boys and the ones that would always get along or whatever. And I just remember somebody in the class who I was sitting next to doing whatever I was doing, just giving me some paper, and they made all these like lines throughout of it, like this bubble that just kept having lines through it. And they gave us markers and, you know, had me draw in the different spaces with those markers. And even at that time, reflecting back, like that's so simple, but like the fact that they didn't, you know, shush me for being, you know, maybe noisy in the class. They didn't get after me. They just provided an opportunity for me to be there in the midst of what was going on, with being focused. And so I drew because of that. And I still, for me, that's like so simple, but it's still a memory etched in my brain from when I was young of somebody taking the time to include me, not in necessarily what they were doing, because obviously as a 7, 8-year-old, what they were talking about was probably way over my head. But the fact that I was present and they were giving me space to be present at that young age. I remember, also, we had a ministry for a while on the congregation, that same congregation, where it was an adoptive parent program. And essentially, everybody in the congregation that was above a certain age was, probably everybody that was an adult, was assigned a youth within the congregation. And there was probably about 10 of us or so that that were a part of this program, that they would assign us to that they would assign an adult to the youth or a couple to one of the youths, and they were invited to do stuff throughout the year together. So I have one of my brothers, the person that was his adoptive parent, took him to a Mariners baseball game, I remember growing up. And I think they ended up taking all of us to the game. But they did other stuff with him as well. Another one, they would take him to, like, the movies or invite him over for games and dinner or something like that. And it was just this intentional opportunity to create relationships among the generations and to feel included in the life of the congregation in a way that wasn't included by your parents, but included by somebody who can be seen as a parental figure in your life. And I saw, I mean, that was, had a great, huge impact on me. I was paired up with an adoptive grandparent in the congregation. Richard Moore was his name, I remember. And we would send, we didn't do a lot together because he was older and had some health issues. And I remember he was the guy that I wanted originally to baptize me, but he wasn't able to because of those issues. So he confirmed me into the church instead. But we shared letters back and forth. And long after the ministry stopped and long after the ministry, nobody was doing it really anymore, we continued that connection. And every couple of months, we would write letters to each other. And I remember when he passed away, I was probably in my early teenage years at that time. One of the last letters he got in the mail was a letter from me, his wife shared afterwards. And she shared how, you know, essentially on his deathbed, you know, just before he passed away, that was one of the final letters that he got to read and how much it brought him joy to receive, you know, this letter from this probably 13-year-old, you know, kid from the congregation or whatever. And that still has a very meaningful impact on me today, knowing that those kind of relationships are what helped inform me as I grew up. In terms of opportunities that I had growing up in the life of the church, I remember at a young age being invited to take on different ministry roles in the congregation, you know, in like worship. It could be picking up the offertory basket. It could be in middle school. I remember I was invited for the first time to give what we call disciples' generous response, which is the public offertory moment in the worship, the collecting of funds, as well as looking at the greater impact of generosity in general. And I remember doing that and being mentored with that along the way. When I was about 15, our congregational retreats were huge in Community of Christ. They're not as much anymore, at least out here. But growing up, they were a big thing, and I loved going. We had an annual retreat every year as a congregation where we would go away to our church campground. And they stopped doing it in my early middle school years, and when I became a high school student, I really wanted to bring it back. So I went to my pastor at the time, and I said, you know, Roger, so I want to bring back the congregational retreat, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to direct it. I'm going to plan it. And instead of shutting me down as like this teenager who was stubborn and had no clue what they were talking about when they said they wanted to direct a retreat for the church, he instead invited me to co-direct it with him. I said, yes, we'll bring that back. That's a great idea, Sean. Let's plan it together and let's lead that retreat together. And so for that first retreat, we did lead that together. And I had a great opportunity to be mentored by this great man in the church who kind of could show me the ropes of what it means to plan for a ministry experience. Because I had no experience whatsoever, obviously. I just wanted to get this done. And he was able to do that. And then I did become the director of that retreat by myself the next year at our church campground. Another meaningful experience for me that I had in terms of being included and mentored at a young age in the life of the congregation was, so we have Spectacular, which is a week-long arts, worship, sports, and leadership camp out at our church college, Grayson University in Lamona, Iowa, every summer. And after that was over, the group of us that came from my congregation back to the back home, we had a sharing service to share about our experiences. And that was the year that I won a gold medal in volleyball, which was a huge issue because I got, or not issue, but it was a huge thing to accomplishment because the year before we got last place on a similar team. And we got the, which last place at spec means that you get fourth place. So it's never It's not like you get like 20th place and you really feel bad about yourself. Like, we still get a fourth place ribbon. And so we, I got up front to speak, to share my testimony, and it was kind of saying, yeah, spec was great. I got the gold medal, so that's really cool. And I kept referring to the gold medal, and I just didn't give anything about the experience really and how it impacted me and how I experienced God through it. I wasn't prepared. That was the problem, as I did not prepare. And so a lady in the congregation who was a huge influence in my life growing up, she took me aside afterwards. It actually happened to be in the middle also of a congregational retreat that I was the director of. And she took me aside and said, Sean, here are some things that I see that are growing great in your ministry as you mature and get older. And I was 18 at the time. I said, but here's why I would like to invite you to maybe go deeper and think about it, how you prepare for ministry. And that conversation went on for, a little while. But it had the hugest impact on me that she was willing to be vulnerable in that moment, knowing that I could have been brushed her off and maybe got upset with her, to take me aside and very pastorally talk about where I was excelling in ministry and the good things she saw happening, but also where there was invitation for improvement. And today that still has a huge impact as I reflect on my more formational years in the life of the church was that encounter with her.
Wow. All of those stories, I just wanted to be like, yes, yes, yes. So time and time again, where adults could have brushed you aside and not mm-hmm. included you or even reprimanded you or could have said, oh my gosh, you're just too young. There's no way that you can even begin to think of what it takes to put on a congregational retreat or, all these different things. Instead, they took you in and said, okay, let's walk side by side and we'll mentor you into this understanding that, then you can take it on yourself at a later time. I just absolutely love that.
Yeah, even down to there was an experience I had where also when I was 15, I started to help cooking for camps at Samish Island. They invited me because, again, I wanted to be involved with everything. So they invited me to help cook breakfast meals for a reunion for 225 people. And we had to get up at like 5 or 5:30 in the morning. And I'm not a morning person and never have been. But did that and then helped with other events. And by the time that I was 17, I was the head cook for a singles reunion that happened at Samish Island, which again, those opportunities are not necessarily common in terms of those kind of roles, but I had great people that mentored me. There's a great family friend in the Seattle area growing up in the church, and that's still a great friend today. And that I serve alongside with the many aspects of ministry, but she mentored me a lot with knowing how to cook in the kitchen and the ropes of everything. I was already a kid that loved to cook, but the fact that she took me in and helped me learn the ropes of that, so that by 17, I could provide that kind of ministry as well for events, for large events. Several moments were just raised in, I think, in an area that was really good about. If there was, interest expressed from the youth that they took a hold of it and they mentored us along the way. They didn't just give us roles and then put us on our own to figure it out, which is something I still see happening at, in some areas, today in church culture, but they actually would journey with us into making that role happen. And the mentoring was so important.
Yeah. Sounds like it. So let's move a little bit further into what you're doing with the church today. I do want to talk about your various priesthood roles, and you are employed with the church. So do you just want to walk us through how that whole development happened?
Sure. So I remember growing up and learning about the priesthood offices not until I was about age 15. We didn't hear a lot about some of that kind of aspects of church life until our later, you know, teenage years, I think. So I remember being about 15 or 16 and sitting at a restaurant with my grandmother and mother, and we were talking about, and somehow priesthood ministry came up. And so I had them explain to me, you know, priesthood, you know, ministry. And I remember asking them, well, do you see a priesthood office that I would possibly fit in? And we talked about that for a little while. And so when I was 20 years old, I received my first priesthood call to the office of deacon. And at that point, the pastor and a member of the pastor team, so there was two of them, asked me to go with them to, you know, a classroom after church on Sunday. And they sat me down and talked about where they saw, you know, how they saw me living out my discipleship, and then invited me to be ordained to the office of deacon, which I was ordained on my 21st birthday, about 2 months later. I had already taken some of the necessary classes in anticipation that that in the near future a call would come, because I definitely sensed within me this deepening desire to serve, and that God was calling me in some directions there. A few years later, I had kind of done the whole leaving home thing. Felt like I needed to leave the congregation I grew up in, that everybody knew me at since I was, you know, a baby, and kind of branched it on my own. So I transferred to another congregation with people that I absolutely love, and that's why I went there, but it just didn't feel like the right fit. And eventually found the right fit at our Community of Christ congregation in Puyallup, Washington. And so I made the decision to transfer there. I remember in the fall, and they were going through an election and some pastors were going to be changing the next year. And so the pastor that was coming in his first day, January 1st, submitted a call to the office of elder for me, to our church leadership, for them to process. And he sat down with me about a week later after it was approved to present that call to me in his home office, and said, I wanted to present this earlier so I could present it to you on January 1st, but they told me that I couldn't actually do that until I was officially the pastor, so I had to wait till January 1st. So that was a journey that a few months later, a friend of mine at the time, who was also a housemate, we were ordained on the same day, me to elder and she to priest, and it was a great day of, I remember a lot of friends coming and supporting us in that. And, so then I currently serve as a 70, and I, with that, I remember, so back, going back to the conversation that I had, with my mother and grandmother at the restaurant, I remember at one point around that same time period in my life, hearing about, the role of 70. And I remember thinking, oh, that sounds so cool. It would be so cool to serve as a 70 someday. And I remember thinking that as a teenager. And then a few years ago, Robin Linkhart was the president of 70 at the time. She now serves as an apostle. But at the time, she was the president of 70 for my area. And she asked to talk with me. And I get on the phone, and it's her and Apostle Harmon on the phone, and which is, you know, a little intimidating at first, and I had a feeling what was going on, but it's still a little intimidating. And they presented that call to 70 for me, and I went through about a year of preparation for that, and was ordained at our Mission Center conference, so our jurisdictional conference that we had a year later by Robin and some other 70 friends of mine. So that was kind of a journey through my priesthood calls, and each of them were, for me, each of them I sensed not long before they happened. So the week prior to receiving my call to 70, I was at a spiritual growth retreat for World Church staff, and that week was so impressed upon me that I had this call to 70 that was happening. And I went home and it was presented the following Tuesday. And so in each time I presented with a call, there was this deep sense of awareness that it was coming in the near future with that. So I do work for the church, and as a full-time minister. I started as a part-time minister. So in 2012, January 1st, 2012, I started working as a part-time minister for the church. They had recruited a new position in my area to oversee our youth camping program. And they had, and at the time, our mission center president, our jurisdictional leader, had taken me aside and said, you know, we're creating this position that I think that you would be a great fit for. Is that something you'd be interested in if offered? And so after all this, everything was done to make it work and everything, they did invite me to fill that position. And I kind of balanced that with another job I was doing at the time, and eventually went to three-quarter time. And then I went to full-time, which is in the capacity that I serve now, serving in a variety of roles in my mission center, still overseeing youth camps, but also seeing the coordination of all of our reunion ministry events in the summertime, and the invitation support minister and youth ministry specialist in the mission center. We also have a leadership team that helps the mission center president and oversee the running of the mission center that I serve on as well. But all through my young adult years as well, I can, up until my, you know, where I'm at now at 33, I can look back and see those times when people in the church have invited me to participate in ministry in a way that was very formational for me. Or if they didn't invite them, I invited myself, and they made space for that to happen. So when I remember when I first joined church staff, I was a volunteer, and it was the church. I looked at the mission center staffing structure for where I live, and I was like, okay, there's not really any young adults on that staffing team. And so I emailed the mission center president one day, and I said, so I'm noticing this, and I really think that there should be a young adult ministries specialist on staff that can oversee events for the mission center, and I would be a great person for that. And but I totally understand if you want to find somebody else, but I really think you should have this role. So the next week, I joined mission center staff. As a volunteer, as the young adult ministries coordinator for the mission center, and still do some aspects of that today, though not as intentionally as I did back then. But again, always having opportunity where there's, you know, they made space for me to provide ministry when I either felt a call to provide, or when they saw it in me and invited me to do that. You can become a youth camp director by around the age of 21. In the church, because that's when you become an official youth worker. In when you're a teenager, you're a youth worker assistant. But when you become a youth worker at 21, you become eligible to start leading youth ministries. And so, you know, at 21, I became the director of our kids camp and did that for 5 or 6 years, and then went on to help at other ministry events. But again, that was another opportunity where I was young. And, you know, I'll admit that there was taking a chance on somebody that was that young in the life of the church and asking them to take on this major role as directing one of, the cherished youth camp events, because Community of Christ, like I said, loves their youth camping program. And it's one of the things that we do, I think, really, really well in a lot of ways. And, but they, again, provided space for me to do that at a young age and to, in a lot of ways, flourish in that role and learn as I went, which really impacted the ministry roles that I took later on. So both as a retreat director at 15 or youth camp director at 21, another being on our family reunion camp planning team, by the age of 18, I was able to take on different aspects of those that really informed me to where I am today. And it really helped pave the way for me, that the path for me to be able to become a full-time minister in the church, because of those opportunities, which now help me be a better minister in the roles that I'm in right now.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. It sounds like all the experiences that you had growing up and in your young adulthood, you know, early young adulthood, really paved the way for what you're doing today and just equipped you with exactly what you needed to do the ministry that you're engaged with today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So one of the reasons why I wanted to do this series of podcasts is because our generation, millennials, mm-hmm. Seem to maybe be more spiritual but not religious, or, you know, they're walking away from the religion of their childhood. And I'm really intrigued by those who stay, you know, stay with organized religion in general. So there's kind of two questions, I guess, that I'm going to wrap up into one. Mm-hmm. Is what do you think the benefits are of religious communities today in the world? And then what makes you personally stay involved with the community of Christ?
Right. So I think that there is great power in religious communities to affect the world in a positive way. Of course, with great power comes the opportunity for great harm as well. And we've seen that happen in many different cases, I think, on the national stage, at least in America, where we understand that religion has done harm to many people. But I still find that there is great benefit for it. It when practiced authentically and when it's staying true to the core message of that religion, the power to transform neighborhoods is great and therefore transform the world. I know that maybe sound a little cliche, a little, you know, we are the world kind of attitude, but I really, you know, feel that that there's that opportunity. So, you know, when I reflect back on the benefits of religious communities, I'll first do that in my own life. When I first graduated high school and was looking for a job, I couldn't find one right away because I would have a lot of anxiety, and I would show up to a place to be interviewed and I would never walk in. They had an interview appointment with them, and I would sit in my car, and then I would just, after enough time had passed, I would drive away. And I did that several times. I also had issues with anxiety with speaking in front of people, which doesn't seem to be an issue anymore. They can't shut me up now. But with that that anxiety that I had, they had I eventually passed by, you know, did an interview for great jobs and took a job working for check cashing and payday loans for a few years out of high school. And over time, I just grew to understand that what I was doing as my, at that time, job was not in line with the principles of Community of Christ. And eventually I was working for a certain company that for check cashing, where we had immigrants come in from who were working, at the nearby fields and, you know, receiving handwritten checks from the people that employed them, and they would come to us because they couldn't have bank accounts. And really, they were coming to cash checks so they could send all their money practically back home to their families. And we were told by, at the time, the supervisor to charge them the absolute max that you could charge them because they don't speak English and they wouldn't understand. And I could not handle that. I just couldn't do that. And so I did quit the job. And I quit, you know, working in that type of environment because I couldn't see, I just couldn't handle the taking advantage of people in that situation. Reflecting on it now, I wish I would have exposed, you know, the company and those practices after I quit, because it's so harmful to people to take advantage of them in that way and oppress them like that. And so, I didn't, but that was, you know, for me, that was a benefit of my religious community teaching me how to live in the world and what was right and wrong, and to understand that that was absolutely wrong, that that was not the way of Christ, and it was, in fact, it was the complete opposite. So how I see it being lived out now, though, I So I talked a little bit at the beginning about the ministry that we did in Puyallup, Washington, when I lived there with the homeless, and how I got that tagline. But that was a ministry that I saw time and time again, our people get transformed. And it was the Freezing Night. It's what they called the Freezing Nights Homeless Shelter Ministry. And it was organized by a group of like 10 to 15 churches that came together and provided a ministry for our homeless in that community. And if they couldn't provide that, you know, shelter ministry in terms of actually them staying there, one church provided the buses to help, or the vans, I mean, to pick up homeless at their different sites and bring them to the church. Another church, the LDS church in the area, the ward there, also helped with coordinating all the driving for us and then volunteering at sites that we're hosting for that night. Another, you know, Presbyterian church would do a similar thing where they would come and bring food, even if they couldn't host. And so we were all of us working together to help provide ministry to the homeless in the community, and then go to council meetings and speak up for the homeless as religious entities within that community to help create change so that there was better services for them. I no longer live in that area, but our congregation there still does a ministry to the homeless and low income that we started in response to that, to the time that we were doing shelter ministry, which was a day shelter. And they still do it 2 days a week where they serve, you know, thousands of mouths every, you know, year, of people that come in to their, to the church there on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and receive food and, relational, opportunities. And so, you know, again, that seeing that impact there, there was a friend within the community that was, that started coming to Community of Christ that ended up deciding to be baptized and confirmed and join the church. In fact, it was the first baptism that I did in the church after being ordained to elder. And on his baptism day, we had people there from probably three or four other churches as well. And in very many ways, it was an ecumenical day, even though it was, he was joining Community of Christ, but they wanted to support him on that journey. And to see the changes that he went through to get to that place and joining the church, and he's volunteered still off and on for different ministry opportunities that come up, especially to this, in the same way that he was ministered to and providing those ministries to others. And so, you know, that was a huge benefit that I see that, you know, again, a religious community can have. And the great thing about that opportunity is that it was, you know, young adults, millennials, I think we tend to gravitate more towards, you know, walking the walk and not just, you know, talking about stuff. And I feel like that's where there ends up being a disconnect between our generation and church life at times. But this was an opportunity for this homeless ministry was an opportunity where people who were not otherwise engaged in the church, most of them young adults, came and volunteered for that ministry and became a vital part of the congregation, just living out their faith in other ways. It didn't have to, you know, it wasn't about necessarily for them going to church on Sunday, but for them, it was about coming to help feed the homeless and not just feed them, but feed them spiritually and relationally as well. To sit with them and talk with them. You know, some of the homeless would stay up all night long because then they would go back to, you know, their camps during the day and sleep. And so we would be playing games with them at 2 a.m. and having some of the best conversations about life. And it would be people of all ages volunteering that would to do that. But I guess especially those that were younger, it was a way to get them involved. And I think it helped give them a sense of purpose at that time in their life as well. I know it did for me as somebody who was in my mid-20s and looking to do more and for my community, have an impact on my community. So that's, you know, again, and it would be an example for me. And then just recently we had, you know, there's been the different marches that have happened, and I've seen our congregations different groups of our congregations that we get together and go do like the women's march together the last 2 years. And, you know, huge, huge groups of people from that congregation and just seeing them support that. As a faith community, we have a congregation in the Bothell, Washington area that there's a 4th of July parade that they go and do, they participate in that parade and they do, and they're a church community and they express that. And, you know, it's kind of signs that about like how love wins and equality and justice for all. And I think that's important. I think it's important to take that stand. I recently marched with a group of people from the church in the Tacoma area, Tacoma, Washington, for the March for Our Lives. And for me, it was powerful to be there with people from my faith community living out our faith in that way, because we felt that it was important to get involved, you know, in that way, and stand up for something. Recently, you know, not long after that, we had the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King Jr.'s death, and there was a march planned for that in Portland, Oregon, that I joined some 4 other church members in participating in that march, and it was put on by religious communities. And, you know, again, the impact that they had by being able to take it to the streets and say, we're not going to be about hate. We're not about, you know, we're about racial equality. We're about inclusion, just like MLK was. And I think that there is great power that the church can have, that churches can have, in if they follow authentically the message of Christ in transforming communities to equalize them, to make sure that everybody is at the table, and that the issues that we see that come up, they come up because we don't follow. Those of us that are Christians, that are that choose to follow Christ, yet we, you know, if we are authentically following what Jesus did, and he rose up to the political leaders of his day and religious leaders of his day, and if we do the same, what great power we have to transform the world. So I still believe that religious, you know, communities have the power to do that, even if we, you know, at times for those of us that do, you know, believe that, I think in Community of Christ does a great job of that. We sometimes have to do that louder and more proactively because of the other voices in the religious community that would say otherwise. But within that, you know, that power becomes an opportunity to do great good. And that really lends itself to what keeps me active in the church. There's a sense of belonging. There's a sense that I belong in this faith community, that I am a part of, that I am wanted, that I am needed. But there's also within that, it gives me purpose. It gives me purpose to do the things that I do, to participate in those marches, to stand up, you know, for other avenues of peace and justice ministry, to and purpose also to, you know, to provide, you know, ministry to our youth. I'm bisexual and still a full-time minister for the church, and that's an awesome thing that I can be included in the church in that way and serve in that way. And for me, it gives me purpose then, knowing that I am fully included, and even, you know, celebrated at times for being who I am, and then in turn can provide ministry to other people, some who they have no identity with that either, and they can receive ministry by me without that being a roadblock. But at the same time, knowing that, like, when I minister to youth, that there are going to be youth there that are struggling with the same things that I struggled with as a youth, with my orientation, and that helps give me purpose to be able to bring ministry to them on their journey as they're struggling to figure out what their orientation or identity is as well. And, I mean, just recently we had in our area, I put on a youth ministry summit that was helping youth ministers engage in practices that were welcoming of kids of all backgrounds, but that included LGBT youth, because that was those kind of opportunities were not really happening in the life of the church. But knowing that there was safe space for me to put on this kind of event for our youth leaders in the area without issue, without anybody complaining, without anybody speaking up against it, and knowing that I can do that and help equip them better to bring, you know, bring people in. I didn't lead, you know, these sessions. I just facilitated the overall experience, but that I could bring in people that I considered either experts or, you know, really well versed in the topics and provide that kind of ministry training without fear of, you know, repercussion because of it, was a beautiful thing. And, you know, that's a religious community that is doing that together, that is facing those hard questions. And it's not like we had people that came there that all thought the same either. We didn't have people there that were all, you know, the same views politically or theologically, or people, they didn't all already understand, you know, the issues that different varieties of youth face, but they came wanting to learn and understand. And there was many cases where they left feeling, I think, more empowered to serve. I remember we talked a lot about identity, which we have a lot of youth that are, you know, that I know of throughout the years that have struggled with their gender identity and struggled with what was placed upon them, I should say. And so they, you know, was trying to come to out as who they truly are. And so we were singing at Campfire the night of the retreat of the youth ministry summit. And there's the song Love, 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 Love. And it talks about love your neighbor as your brother, love your neighbor as your sister. And she leaned over to me and she said, maybe we shouldn't sing it that way anymore. Because brother and sister are, you know, just two very specific types of gender identity. Maybe we should be seen like friend or sibling or something like that. And it was just, for me, it was like this aha moment that somebody had there, because they were willing to come to the table and learn and understand. And that's one of the things that I value so much, and that I think that religious communities can do a lot for. And I think that we could do a lot more for that. We can, you know, that there's the power for, I've said to congregations the last couple of years, so that we know there's a lot of disagreement in our culture today. We know that there is very opposing sides in our political climate. But what if the church was a place where we opened our doors to have community town hall meetings on specific topics that were at play in that community? And we were just the safe space for that to happen. Not necessarily pressing an agenda that we had, or even making it a quote-unquote religious event, but that it was a community event that we were hosting at Community of Christ for that community to talk about how does gun violence shape our community? How do we keep our teachers and students safe? And other issues like that. There's so much opportunities for doing even more. So.
Yeah. Thank you. I love that you stress that religions have a lot of, you know, clout in society, that we mm-hmm. really do, you know, religions in general, they can sway public opinion pretty mm-hmm. easily. People put a lot of stock into what religious leaders say. And I think that you raising up that we have a responsibility to truly, authentically live out Christ's mission. And our understanding of that would be that there is a place for all. And, you know, in Community of Christ, we have wording like all are called for that. And I think particularly, you know, with you being a bisexual man who is a young adult who is working with youth, how impactful that is to show that you don't have to fit one little box that people mm-hmm. always, right. you know, that people sometimes contribute with religion. You know, they think that, oh, well, if you're a preacher, or you're a minister, then you've got to fit in this box. But you pretty much explode the box, which I think is
right. Yeah. And the person who told me at the time that I wasn't their grandpa's kind of preacher, she didn't know that I was bisexual at yeah. the time. So, right. So I didn't come out until just a year and a half ago. So she had no clue, but you know, I knew that something was going on. And so I knew that there was even deeper meaning than that. Which is cool.
Yeah. But how great is it to be part of, you know, rewriting the Christian story? Because, you know, like you did say, religion, specifically Christianity, has been used to harm people. And so to be part of that, you know, mm-hmm. reclaiming and rewriting the script, I think is really powerful. And honestly, that's part of what drives me in my ministry. It looks differently than yours, but I recognize that religion has the capacity to do such good in the world.
Right.
And, you know, I want to be a part of that. I want to be part of the new understanding of what that could look like, which is one reason why I really like our recent sections of the Doctrine and Covenants,
yeah.
because I think that that's what it's getting at. So with all of this, what would you say are some of the challenges about being a millennial or a young adult in Community of Christ?
I think that there's, you know, a lot of our, so we have a lot of congregations that have been around for a long time and, that I absolutely love, but they, I see at times struggling with understanding, you know, their identity within today's culture. And for young adults, for millennials, I feel like there is a desire to engage, but in a different way than what the church has known. And so I think that's a huge challenge for us, is to know how to bridge that gap. And I think that we're starting to, I feel a sense of movement within Community of Christ where there is this understanding that's starting to unfold of recognizing that we have to do something different. That what we have done in a traditional church congregational model is not working anymore and hasn't for a while. And I think there's great opportunity though for young adults to engage in that unfolding, because what I sense is that young adults want to possibly be a part of something different, but they've become so maybe disenchanted with what has been that maybe they don't even realize that there's an opportunity for them to become a part of something different. We talk about, you know, that we've lost, there's a lot of talk about, you know, why are we losing, you know, young adults in the life of the church? And I always hear stuff about, well, they want to go where there's better music, or they want to go where there's the band, I should say. We're known for singing in Community of Christ, but I will fully admit that though hymns are beautifully written, they don't necessarily work as singing for all generations at times, I feel. And so that's always brought up. And yet, I don't think that that's necessarily true either. I think that's kind of a false narrative that we need to change to be like other, you know, churches that are bringing in young adults, because a lot of those big churches, they don't retain young adult involvement. Young adults will bounce around from a few, you know, over time from this, go to this one for a few months and then to this one for a few months, or they stop going altogether because the engagement was not there. And so I think one of the challenges that we face is how do we look to engage? And for a lot of young adults, what I sense in my own life and in the lives of my friends is, again, that sense of just wanting to belong and belong in a way that fits for them. And so maybe Sunday morning doesn't fit for them. But like I know of a congregation in my area that is exploring right now the opportunity of having on like one Saturday a month brunch for young adults and inviting them to a restaurant and having brunch with one another and sharing in conversations and sharing about life. And, you know, maybe it's not going to look like a deeply religious model that we've known, but it's going to be a new way of living out what we teach and not just teaching and with our words. And so, and I think that's what a lot of people in my generation, you know, what we want is we just want to belong and be a part of something, but not something that looks like how it's always looked. Table fellowship is so important, and whether it be at a coffee shop or in somebody's home, the young adults like to spend time with one another. And so, you know, how does that shape how we live out our ministry, knowing that they're also really busy and working jobs that are at weird times of days at times, and going to school and, you know, all starting families and all these things. But how do we let that impact our ministry, influence our ministry, shape our ministry, instead of trying to get our view of ministry, instead of trying to shape them into our box of what ministry should be like. And so I think that's a huge challenge for the church in how we engage with millennials today. But I see moments of hope where I see, again, the example in Puyallup with the homeless ministry where they engaged young adults because it was actually doing something to live out the message of Christ. I see, you know, those moments when I gather with young adults in retreats where we just spend time with each other. We don't usually have a lot of agenda. It's just about coming together, and we'll have some worships, but we share our lives and we hike together and we go to the beach together at those retreats, or we just simply be with one another. And I think that a lot of young adults are just looking for that, the opportunity to just be themselves authentically with others. And if we can help shape the religious climate to provide space for that at the table, then I think amazing things could happen. We have to get over the hurdles of what has been church, though. And that's the view that a lot of people have about religious, you know, communities. And it's a huge one, though, to get over.
You just named several needs that you felt like young adults had as far as, you know, in relation to a religious community, that table fellowship and just simply being with one another.
Mm-hmm.
Relational. It sounds like you're getting at a lot of relational based things that a traditional church setting doesn't necessarily fill.
Like, for example?
Well, like, I mean, maybe theology. Like if, like your typical worship service with... If they have been abused by maybe biblical passages, mm-hmm. et cetera, before,
right.
You know, how can we help people maybe work through some of the theology aspect? So it does remain Christ-centered.
Right. So, but that gets back to just, you know, what we're talking about with relational ministry altogether, because you have to truly meet them, anybody, you know, whether it's a millennial or not, where they're at. If you don't meet them where they are authentically at in their life, then you have already lost them, because then you're just trying to get them to where you're at, or where you think you're at. Because I know that my ideas of where I'm at changes every week. So as I continue to understand who I am, and I'm somebody that's a full-time minister for the church, and yet I'm struggling right now with even my own, you know, understanding of how I feel congregational life is lived out. And does worship work for me? A lot of times it doesn't. In terms of the, you know, 11 a.m. Sunday morning model, it doesn't. But, you know, those questions about the big theology questions of life that, you know, maybe they've been harmed in the past. If you can start with that relational ministry of just getting together and being authentic with one another, I think that lends itself to possibilities for those kind of things that you're talking about to occur. Because then you get to know the person. Then you get to understand where they're at in their life and what they're struggling with. And from there, you can walk a journey alongside them that is also alongside God as well. And grow together. Because when we minister, we both, you know, everybody grows out of that experience, not just those that... There is no such thing as just bringing ministry to somebody, because you are always receiving ministry in the end as well. So, I think there's great power for creating space, like at a table, you know, have some good coffee going, and, you know, making sure you have, you know, creamer and sugar, flavored creamers for the different people that are there, the different types that we all are when we enjoy our, you know, tea as well, I guess, if you have to have tea as well. maybe just water. You know, in talking about those questions of life and letting people, you know, say, you know, this about church sucks for me. It doesn't work. And here's how it's harmed me in the past. And, you know, journeying with that through them together, talking about scripture, talking about our understanding of God, you know, talking about how we haven't seen religious community, you know, have an active role in the life of their neighborhood, but where we can go, and, you know, and finding out what we all feel about it. You know, the thing about community of Christ is that we have, you know, we have identity, message, mission, and beliefs. We have things that are core to who we are. we don't necessarily have, you know, a creed that you have to follow and, you know, say, I'm going to do this to be a member. But we do have the way of Jesus, and we do have things that we pull out from that way that we see as being really important that the church stands for. But even if though the church has an understanding of things officially, there is still space for people that are at all parts of their journey to be in community of Christ. And that is a huge blessing, I think, that we could bring to the millennials, is let them know that, yeah, you don't fully agree with everything we believe in, and that's okay. Because in the end, we all believe in, you know, in love and peace and building a better world. And so what does that look like, even if we don't, our understandings are different from one another? So I think there's, again, if it gets back to that relational ministry and young adults, and I think all people, but, you know, I'm a young adult, and so I see it this way, crave relational aspects of their life. We feed off of it in a lot of ways.
Yeah, exactly. And this, what you are saying reminds me of what you had said that had earlier happened to you when you were a kid, and how the people just met you right where you were and right. weren't necessarily trying to get you to mold into their worship service model, et cetera. But they, you know, just thought, okay, let's keep you present here. And yeah. we're going to, you know, create a space for you in this moment. And so that kind of leads into what my next question was going to be, is how we can empower youth today. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people are really intimidated by youth ministry. and you know, they're scared. They don't know much about kids or teens, et cetera. They don't really know what they have to offer them. I've just discovered that there's a lot of fear around youth ministry. But how have you been able to, you know, help people get excited about youth ministry? Or, you know, be that mentor that has led people into leadership roles, et cetera.
Yeah, you know, there is at times fear with youth ministry, but I think the fear is sometimes, you know, it's a projection of their own insecurities. And I have seen at times where we have been, for example, recruiting youth for, or staff for a youth camp where there was staff that there was people out there that could be invited to serve who were not being asked. People who were maybe in the shadows of congregational life, maybe people who were a little bit older. And so they had themselves kind of dismissed that as part of their ministry, or maybe they weren't looked at as needing to do it. But youth ministry needs people of all backgrounds and all types and all ages to provide ministry, because we have a diverse group of youth. And so, you know, sometimes a youth comes to camp and or to an event, and they need somebody there who's like an older sibling figure or somebody that's like a friend figure in their life. Some come to the events and they're really needing somebody that can be a healthy, authentic mother, father, aunt, uncle type figure in their life. And others are needing somebody who has kind of that wisdom of an older person, of a grandparent or in their life. And so it's important that we have people that have all those understandings with them as they come in those ministries. So, and I have seen, you know, them, people who were uncomfortable or on edge about maybe, is this the right ministry for me, that when invited and knowing that they're going to be, you are not there to bring ministry necessarily to all the kids. You're not there. Ministry is never a one size fits all experience. And we struggle with that at times with the diversity of ministry. But there's going to be youth there who really need your ministry, even if not all of them feel like, you know, even if you don't connect with all of them. And it's been great to see, you know, when that happens, different people take on roles that maybe they had never thought they could do before, or maybe would have never experienced before. One of my jobs is also to recruit directors for our youth camps and our reunions experiences. And it's great to see, you know, how they approach that role in the life of the church and how they live that out, because it, again, provides space for growth in their own life as they're providing avenues of growth for those that are children and youth in the church life as well. I think that one of the ways that, again, that we can power both people that are in youth ministries as well as youth and children is we the whole mentoring thing. And mentoring being that it's not a one-sided journey. It's a journey of people together where they learn from each other, and it's not about one person passing on wisdom and knowledge onto the other. It's about sharing that with each other. And there's a lot that can happen with, you know, a 14-year-old sharing with you that, you know, the way that they look at the world. And there's a lot of wisdom in that. And there's wisdom in the 65-year-old camp counselor who's sharing it back with them. And it goes both directions. We did an event in our area about 10 years ago where it was called Blessings of the Generations. And the idea was, it was the evangelist team for our mission center who were putting that together. And they invited me to be on that team as a young adult representative. And they wanted to, the event was going to happen in the fall of that year. And they wanted to have conversations, group conversations, but also one-on-one where somebody who was, for example, 15, 16, 17 would be paired with somebody who was maybe in their mid-50s, but then somebody who was an older young adult, like, you know, 35, would be paired with somebody that was like 85. And so that there was these generation gaps. And the idea was that they wanted to bring us all together and talk about what does it mean to be church? What does it mean to be, what does ministry mean? What did we get most from church when we were younger? What do we get from it now? And that was just a huge impact that, that I saw happen because people were brought together and had authentic conversations with one another. And that was a way to empower them. I mean, I saw a lot of congregational leaders leave that experience and going back to think seriously about, do I have young adults in my congregation who have priesthood calls that I should be acting on? Are there roles in my congregation that I can work with youth on? And, you know, or young adults on so that they can become a active part of the congregation in that way and live out their ministry in that way. And that can, if we don't mentor them into those roles, if we don't mentor anybody into a role we give them, it'll fail that ministry and themselves and to the congregation as well. But when we actually walk the journey with them and, there's a lot of empowerment with being able to give, to have a voice, but in a role, but to have somebody there to help nurture that within you as well.
Again, I love that you talk about mentoring and relationship and in doing this podcast and talking to a wide variety of people and just my own experience with ministry, I really realize that that's where success is found, that it's in those relationships, that it's in those mentoring. And I think of the people that have mentored me in my short time in Community of Christ. And I feel really lucky to be able to have people that have, you know, taken an interest in meeting me where I'm at and not necessarily just throwing me aside when I flounder and whatever. It's just filled with learning opportunities. And I think it's particularly important to recognize that in our youth. And that's one thing that I love seeing at SPEC is how much potential there was in our youth. I mean, they are so craving, they're just craving opportunities to share with their congregation, to be more involved. And to be honest, it kind of broke my heart sometimes because I would hear them tell stories about how they don't feel liberated in their congregation.
Right.
And, you know, SPEC is the place that they can actually come and, you know, sign up for a worship service planning class and plan, you know, tons of services on their own, you know, with the mentored guidance.
Right.
So I really think that that model is where we're going to find the most success.
Right. And I don't want to, I certainly don't want to put on, you know, the assumption out there to people that my experience in the church is the experience of all the youth in the church or is a, you know, it's a common experience. I think there's still a lot of congregations within Community of Christ that struggle with the engagement of youth and children and expect them to see it as a spectator sport that follows the rules of those that are in leadership and then the rules of the tradition for what that congregation, how they have lived out their ministry. So again, that's a struggle that we still have is how do we make congregational life not a spectator sport for certain groups of people where we expect them to follow and act in the way that others want to see them act and follow and live out. But yeah, when it does happen, amazing things can happen in the lives of individuals, in the lives of youth and young adults when they are actually engaged in a way that, that makes sense for them and makes sense for this. And, you know, I still have a lot of young adults that say to me, I like Sunday worship. That feeds me. That does, you know, so, you know, we also want to put it in the box that it's not just that all young adults feel the same, you know, the same way that they like a sermon. So a sermon that's prepared for it. And, yeah. but they like it, you know? And so I also don't want to, you know, I want to make sure that there's that clarity out there too, that we, millennials are definitely not a one size fits all.
For sure. So Sean, what gives you hope as we move forward into the future as a church?
I have so much hope, for Community of Christ, right now, to transform the world. I think that there's a lot of good things going on that I've seen in the last few years, here in the U.S. and other parts of the church and other countries where we had our national conferences for full inclusion of LGBT, to know that we had gotten to a point where that happened and it happened overwhelmingly. The vote to support that was overwhelmingly positive. That gives me hope. I have hope within, our new hymnal that we sing from, what we call it new, it's been around for 5 years now, but, we still think of it as a new hymnal and probably will for a while. And, to know that there is songs in there that we sing, like, when a color divides us, when the darkness surrounds us, when we choose to look elsewhere, open our eyes, teach us compassion and love, or lyrics from another song that, talks about how, you know, till all the jails are empty and all the bellies filled, until pulpits, press, and politics are freed of greed and hate, God has work for us to do. I mean, these are challenging texts that we have in our hymns that we sing. And our hymns are who we are or who we strive to become. I think in many ways our hymnal invites us into the future. I have hope within that. When the Me Too movement came out last year, it's not a new movement. It just was re-energized last year. I know that there is a Facebook friend of mine who's a friend of yours that shared about how not long after that, she was at a conference where they sang the hymn Sacred the Body, and it had the verse, "Love respects persons, bodies, and boundaries. Love does not batter, neglect, or abuse. Love touches gently, never coercing. Love leaves the other with power to choose." And so if we're singing that and we believe that, then there is an opportunity there to transform, using that as a vehicle to transform who we are as we look within ourselves, as well as the communities around us. And that brings me hope. And then lastly, they're just, you already mentioned kind of some newer inclusion, scripture from the Doctrine and Covenants. And there's several that I could, that I think of, but one that I was thinking of in preparation for today was from 165, which is the latest part of Doctrine and Covenants that we have. That's our latest scripture that's been added. And part of it says, "Beloved community of Christ, do not just speak and sing of Zion. Live, love, and share as Zion. Those who strive to be visibly one in Christ, among whom there are no poor or oppressed, as Christ's body, lovingly and patiently bear the weight of criticism from those who hesitate to respond to the divine vision of human worth and equality in Christ. This burden and blessing is yours for divine purposes. And always remember, the way of suffering love that leads to the cross also leads to resurrection and everlasting life in Christ's eternal community of oneness and peace. Trust in this promise." And so for me, when I think especially about our generation, looking at scriptures like this and seeing that the church is, being informed by scriptures that say, you're going to receive criticism by following the way of Christ that may not be the way that others follow Christ, or that may not be reflective of what's happening in your community, but do it anyways. Because human worth is more important than, you being criticized or you being, others trying to, you know, silence your voice. And that just, that has great power for all people. But me as a young adult looking at a scripture like that, that the church now has, and it's, wow, that's awesome. That's empowering. That's the way forward for us.
I love everything you just said. I know this is a podcast, so people can't see how I'm just like vigorously nodding my head the whole time. But I really am. Yeah, all those things give me a lot of hope too. And those things, I've seen people join the church because of the exact things that you mentioned, which helps drive and fuel my hope for the future.
Yeah.
Well, Sean, is there anything else that you would like to leave us with today?
Yeah, I just wanted, so I guess, in closing, I would just lift up, you know, the song For Everyone Born is a huge anthem for Community of Christ right now since the new hymnal came out, an anthem of inclusion. And there's a verse in there that I just wanted to share, and that's, for young and for old, a place at the table, a voice to be heard. A part in the song, the hands of a child and hands that are wrinkled. I love that verse, that line. For young and for old, the right to belong. And I would just like to leave with the understanding that it's not about youth ministry. It's not about young adult ministry. It's about Christ ministry, and that all of us are invited to engage in that ministry together. And so it's important that we create opportunities where people from all ages can feel like they are in a safe space to journey together. And which is why it's important to lift up that it's not just about those of us that are young adults, that are millennials, those of us that are younger than that, but it's about us coming to the table with those that have hands that are wrinkled, talking about life, sharing about life, going out and living out mission together, and recognizing the inherent worth of everybody that is around us. And that when we do that, community of Christ happens. It comes to fruition. And so it excites me every time I see opportunities where people of all ages are working together for a common purpose and goal. And gives me great hope for the future.
Amen. You might not be a grandpa's preacher, but you're my kind of preacher. And I have been told that I have very strong grandma tendencies. Oh, so great. Thank you. This has been a really, really good conversation.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use. And while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.